out in a galaxy far away. Certainly they've had the experience, but it's hard for a scientist in the laboratory to verify that. In the remote viewing experiences that people have, we think that there is a continuum that would begin with remote viewing, where a person in the laboratory describes his or her mental pictures of a distant place. On the other end of that continuum is the out-of-body experience, where the person is strongly convinced that they have been to another place, had experiences, interacted with people there. Now, in remote viewing, a person, if they wish, can bring more of their emotionality, sensitivity, sexuality, whatever they feel comfortable with, they can bring more and more of themselves to the experience and have a more and more involving experience at a distant place.
Yeah. Don't you think with remote viewing we cannot get into etheric form, which with astral projection human being can be etheric form and see even in the other planets and other universes what's going on?
Well, Ingo Swann has done experiments where he has given pretty good evidence that he has been able to describe other planets. He described a magnetic field and some other aspects of Mercury, which were unexpected, and he described rings around Jupiter, which were unexpected. And he did this even though both of those events were contrary to what the astronomers said. So I think that it's true that even an earthbound psychic is able to cast his awareness into interplanetary distances and come back with verifiable data. Now, when you say he comes back with data from the etheric plane, it's very hard to verify what's on that plane. Even though a person may have a very convincing experience, it would be as a kind of state-dependent phenomena. A person has had an experience, but it's difficult for a scientist in the laboratory to verify his experience of the etheric, whereas if somebody says, I've had an experience of Jupiter and there are rings around it, you may not know what to do that day, but by and by NASA came back with photographs and said, what do you know, Jupiter has rings just like Saturn, and we were the first to know.
I see. Now, is there any institute right now that we can develop our psyche, or we could have more intuition practices or things with you at this time?
I don't know of any institute that I could recommend.
You do not have any
that would teach you to develop your psychic ability. We published it. Keith Harari and I published a book called The Mind Race in the earlier part of this year, which describes the exercises that we used at Stanford Research Institute to help people develop psychic abilities. We think that remote viewing is really a very simple, natural ability. And as we've been on the air this evening, I've described a number of different things that a person does to develop his ability, mainly describing mental pictures and feelings and the various other things that really correspond to psychic functioning and staying away from analysis. Later on, I could talk about specific training things you could do with a friend to develop your psychic abilities. I would say at this point that it's something that you can learn to do yourself with a friend rather than subscribing to an institute of psychic illumination. I think that not that many people are able to help you. It's something you have to learn to do for yourself.
Yeah, it's very sad with all these capabilities we have in this country. We don't have anything in this field progressively evolved, you know.
There are a number of small groups that I'm working with directly to help facilitate the development of psychic abilities and healing abilities. I work with small groups around these issues.
Is there any groups in L.A. we can contact with them?
Well, I work in out of Los Angeles.
Okay, with the same number you gave us?
Yes.
Okay. Judith, I have a question from you. I know a person which is schizophrenic, and he has experiences, like you said, he hears voices and things, but he's been treated by drugs, by doctors. Now, you saying you can help him?
I think it's very possible to view his experiences from a totally different perspective. And by doing that, schizophrenics can really be helped. When they're put in a conventional hospital setting, they're looked at from a very limited point of view. And really, they're only treated with medications, and very little emphasis is put on their experiences.
Because we know he's not crazy, he knows it, and he feels good, but this experience comes and goes all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he has headaches and hears things, and you think you can? It's possible that he can get better?
I think it's possible that he can get better, given that he has the motivation to get better and work with the different techniques that we've been discussing. Does he have any experience with that?
With what?
With the different techniques that we've been discussing.
No, he has not.
As long as he has the desire, he could definitely get better.
Okay. Dr. Russell Tark?
Yes.
Hello. Russell, is there any number we can contact you after another day if you have any questions?
I think you can phone the station here or write to me in San Francisco at 1550...
1550?
California Street. In San Francisco.
Zip code?
It'll get to me with that address.
California Street, San Francisco.
They know where he is in San Francisco.
One of the important things that Judith was describing, one of the contributions that she is able to make, is that it's important to separate people who are genuinely sick and delusional. If a person is in the hospital, for example, diagnosed as schizophrenic, they may, in fact, be having hallucinations that have nothing to do with psychic functioning.
Oh, that's what I was, yeah.
So it's very important to separate out.
How can you do that?
Well, an experienced clinician can do that by interviewing the person.
I see.
But it's important to say, just because a person is having mental images does not mean that they're psychic, just as a person having psychic images doesn't mean that they're crazy, and it requires an experienced clinician to separate out whether it's one or the other or both.
Okay, so what you're saying makes only some people psychic, but some people say everybody is psychic if they develop that psychic awareness.
I would agree that in our experience, most people are able to develop some kind of useful psychic functioning. We find remote viewing to be a latent ability that most people have not developed, but can develop with great ease if they practice. So I agree with you that psychic functioning is something that most people have and most people can develop. But it's all, just going back to your earlier question, it's important to separate out the fact that some people do have mental illness of one kind or another, are having hallucinations, perceiving things in their life which have no kind of objective existence at all, apart from their own experience. And it would be a mistake to imply that people who are having unasked for hallucinations are actually psychic. And it's important to make the distinction.
That's right. I wish in the future, with the kind of power you have in this field, you can open an institute just for this research and people can get involved with this thing.
I think the Spiritual Emergency Network is a step in that direction.
You're involved in that, too?
I'm not personally involved, but I know many of the people working for them.
Okay.
With that institute.
Does that help you, Saeed?
Thank you very much.
I have one more thing for you, Saeed. On November 7th, my guest will be Robert Monroe of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, and we are going to conduct an experiment at the institute in Virginia during the course of the show. Two of the out-of-body travelers will leave there and come to the studio, where we will have boxes that have been brought by skeptics here that are closed and sealed, and they will check out the interior of those boxes and return to Virginia and call us during the latter part of the show and describe what they found here.
Well, this program is not for skeptics, right? But
we hope that we will be successful with that.
Right. This would be November 7th, you said.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Moon.
We'd like to feel the program is for anybody with an open mind, whether a skeptic or believers. From the data and the work that a lot of us are doing, we'd like to feel that psychic functioning is not a matter of belief, but a matter of data. So whether a person is skeptical or a long-term concerned person, we'd like to feel that everyone should be thinking about this area, even skeptics.
Thank you very much, and have a nice evening.
All right, Saeed, thank you very much.
Good night.
I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Dr. Russell Targ, Dr. Judith Orloff. Russell Targ is with me, Dr. Judith Orloff of the Spiritual Emergency Network, and we are talking to who?
Are Boris.
Who?
Boris.
Hi, Boris. What's on your mind tonight?
I was wondering more about these voices that invade during these procedures, and I'd like to describe what has happened to about three or four women in my experience. The general pattern was that these voices began to seem to try to get control of the individual by promising all sorts of things to them, if you will just obey what I want you to do. In other words, you can become powerful, you can become queen of the May, if you will do what I do, and then you will do what I say, and then they would start making tests for obedience.
See, what kind of practices are you involved in that cause this whole thing? Can you tell us what you're doing?
Well, these individuals were curious about psychic phenomena and wanted to raise consciousness, and they seem to have left themselves open for invasion in some way.
I think that can be very, very frequent. You really have to look at your motivations as to why you're getting into this area. If your primary motivation is power and ego, then you will get the kinds of voices that are coming in.
Well, that is quite interesting, because these were women who were at uncertain places in their lives and wanted some new thing to go on, perhaps. And the results were really quite disastrous. It was a negative experience, I would say. One of them was apparently taken over by someone who claimed to be a Mohammedan and taken on trips all over the world on instructions from the voices. The only positive experience I had from it was that I learned about this phenomenon, and I'm very curious still about what these voices are. They seem to be extremely vociferous and full of all sorts of information and misinformation.
Well, the voices can be a wide number of things. First of all, it can be a pure psychic perception. A voice could come in and give you information, let's say, about future events, and it might be accurate. That is one type. Another type is the projection of the psyche's fears outward onto a voice, meaning your own fears will be voiced through that external voice. It's the way the psyche has of really softening the blow of what's happening. And you have to be careful of the psychological perceptions that you have around this.
Well, that certainly sets the case. What we did that seemed to work is we kept bringing these individuals back to what you call grounding. In
mm-hmm.
other words, we contested what needed to be contested. And that seemed to be part of the treatment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a good idea. And one thing I'd really like to emphasize is how important balance is here. Psychological balance, spiritual balance, physical balance, emotional balance, when you deal with any of these issues. And to just go in on the psychic realm and, let's say, not be balanced emotionally, I don't think is a good idea.
Well, I think you've helped my picture of that quite a bit, and I'm very glad for the information that your organization exists, because it happened very much as you described. They were taken to hospitals where conventional drugs actually did stop the voices, but
mm-hmm.
they didn't cure the problem.
Right, exactly.
All right, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Boris, thank you very much for sharing that with us, and best of luck to you. You're on Open Mind. Who are we talking to, please?
This is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, and I wanted to share one of my precognitive dreams. I will state that my kids and I all, both, we all have this. But I had a dream that came, that happened. The whole thing happened 6 months later. I was driving in a car, and I drove to a building that looked like an Aztec building. I walked through the entrance, and there was fresh wood. I didn't understand the fresh wood, and when I got inside, I'm trying to digest it down for you so it won't be too long. When I got inside the building, I noticed a transom, you know, a door in the kind of the ceiling, and I wanted to look the structure over. I went into the bathroom. It was an unusual bathroom with a big blue bathtub and green carpet all around it. And I went from there to go out through the back of the building. I opened the door, and I became frightened because I felt death out there. I closed it. I opened it again, and I said, oh, no, it's changed into a park, and there's beautiful red trees out here. Well, 6 months later, I was married. I went to Hawaii on my honeymoon, and as I came around the Kona coast, we came to the Hilton there, and or maybe it's a Sheraton, and it's an Aztec building. It's the shape of an Aztec building, and that was the building. And as I walked through the front entrance, they had all wood shelving for gifts and things that way. When I went inside and we went upstairs, there was a transom exactly where I had seen it. I walked out on the balcony. I looked down. The swimming pool was the bathtub. We went to a park there where... It was a park, but at one time a tidal wave had come in and killed all these children, and it was now made into a park and a memorial park to them.
That's a very interesting story. As you related that to me, if someone had told me about the dream, the part of it that would have struck me most clearly is the fact that you saw a large blue bathtub. Now, that's a, first of all, shows that you have color that you're remembering in your dreams.
Yes.
And also you saw a very unusual object that's not the sort of thing that people would normally dream about. Very bizarre,
yes.
But it was striking for you. That would be the indication for you or for someone listening to your dream that that was of likely precognitive origins rather than something of your wish fulfillment or anxiety.
Uh-huh.
And it's that kind of clear, colorful, and bizarre aspect that can be the key to separate out precognitive dreams from other kinds.
Well, it threw me because I hadn't had one quite that clear.
Are you having any precognitive dreams since then?
Well, I have them, but lots of times they're not anything real important. But since
I'm having a precognitive dream here, Mary. We're going to have to take a break.
All right.
And I thank you very much for sharing that with us.
All right.
We're with Dr. Russell Targ and Dr. Judith Orloff tonight on Open Mind. We're talking about psychic functioning. We all do, and we all can do it better. My goodness, the night is just about swept under our feet already, but we do have about 55 more minutes. With Dr. Russell Targ and Dr. Judith Orloff, we're talking about psychic functioning, and we're talking about the Spiritual Emergency Network. The very name of that enterprise captures my attention because I do believe that there is a lot about the way we are that can be traced back to the spiritual intelligence that we have. And it, too, perhaps needs a little tinkering with and can have its own kind of neuroses. Would you say?
Yeah, I think basically for everyone to define their own spiritual part of their being is essential in order to work within this framework. And to acknowledge that there's something greater than ourselves to tap into, an energy force or God or some such entity that allows us to channel energies that we wouldn't necessarily be able to without that assumption. And I think given that we all do have a spiritual nature, to really tap into that from a psychological standpoint, from an intellectual standpoint, to better ourselves and to look at some of the phenomena that happen to all of us in terms of psychic phenomena, hearing voices, having visions, as a manifestation of the spirit, and to look at it from that standpoint.
Okay, Judith, thank you very much. Let's go again to our callers. Hello, you're on Open Mind tonight.
Hello.
Uh-huh.
I'm Marie. I'm calling because I also know that this psychic phenomenon exists. I also have dreams. What the doctor's saying about bizarre things that you dream about. If I'm going to dream about a swimming pool, I'm not going to dream about a blue bathtub. I'll see a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
I am 100% accurate. I also can read people's minds. And if I want to, I can even control their actions, so to speak. But I don't do that.
You got a lot of power there.
Well, I don't do that. I stay away from that. But the thing I'm actually calling for is that I don't understand the mechanics of it. If you take the dreams, for example, according to relativity, if you'd approach the speed of light, moving forward, you'd see it into an object's future. Moving backwards, you'd see its past. And then your brain waves, I don't recall the exact number. It's like 4 or 40 or 400 centimeters per second squared. Isn't that right? Anyway, I was thinking perhaps people who have this ability have some kind of electrical shower upon the brain that would make the brain waves go faster, but they still couldn't approach the speed of light.
One of the things that we've found in experiments is that psychic functioning that we see in the laboratory, at least, does not seem to be carried by electromagnetic waves. We've done experiments with people in electromagnetically shielded rooms and even in a submerged submarine, which shields out even the longest electromagnetic waves. And people are able to do excellently under these conditions and under conditions where they're separated by great distances from the thing they're trying to see. The Soviets believe that all psychic functioning is carried by long wavelength electromagnetic radiation, but that really doesn't fit the data because electromagnetic waves would not allow you to see far into the future as laboratories indicate that people are able to do and the previous caller described. So there's certainly some kind of reliable psychic function that people can learn to do, but the explanation is going to be different than electromagnetic waves.
So, in other words, you also then don't know.
Well, we actually do know something, and what we know is that psychic functioning is not a kind of electromagnetism. What it appears is that there is more going on with regard to human beings than the simple nuts and bolts reality that engineers have been describing for many years. Mm-hmm. Physics has been very successful in describing a four-dimensional universe with three dimensions of space and one dimension of time as a way of describing how people are separated or connected together. From the data of remote viewing, where a person is able to describe and experience a place that's separated from them by space and time, it's evident that there is a more complicated explanation needed to describe the space and time that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
If a person is experiencing right now what's going on in Moscow tomorrow, evidently there is some additional kind of connectivity. And that connection between us here in Los Angeles and the person in Moscow tomorrow morning is not electromagnetic. It's some connectivity, some connection that comes from the very nature of the space and time we live in, so that although when we look across the room and say, I see a lamp, we feel we really understand the space between us and the lamp. But in reality, there is more going on. The description of the space and the time that separate things is going to be more complicated than the simple explanation we've been using.
And as far as, I think it's termed astral projection, where you would actually travel outside your body and so forth, do you know any mechanics of that?
Well, astral projection is really an experience that as people have described a particular kind of psychic functioning as astral projection. That is, we don't know what it even means to talk about the astral plane, and we don't know what's projecting. The data from astral projection indicate that people are able to experience distant places and sometimes even interact with people who are at distant places. Now, that definitely occurs, but I don't think it requires a metaphysical explanation. I think that this distant interaction or even an out-of-body experience is part of the continuum of remote viewing. That's not an explanation of how it works, but it's related to things that we see in the laboratory that people are able to do. And if we call it by the names of what we see, a person is viewing something at a distance, then we all know what's going on. That is, I feel much more comfortable saying he is viewing a remote object than saying he's doing astral projection, because astral projection is sort of the baggage that we're carrying forward from the 19th century that's very hard to verify. If somebody sees something on the astral plane, there's no way in principle to know whether they're making it up or having a psychic experience. If a person says, I see something in Mark's Prospect in Moscow and they're just moving a red truck down the street, you can tell whether that person is making it up, hallucinating, or doing psychic functioning. So I think that we would be wise to stick with the data of things that are verifiable and really stay away from these kind of 19th century views that we're carrying forward from the spiritualist interpretation of psychic functioning.
I have two closing comments because I know there are other people waiting a long time. One is a comment about the future. A woman had called in about changing it or avoiding it,
mm-hmm.
and I think you'd agree with that. I'm just like to say from my own point of view, I don't see how it can be done. I have tried to do it many years ago just to make extra money. It's small potatoes, but I would dream on football games so that my husband could place bets on them.
Well, they were working at the silver market, so you
know. It's silly. It's many years ago, but that was one way we had to get extra money. And usually I would have very clear dreams. A person would tell me, put your money on Dallas, put your money here and there. This particular time, we had already made picks because I wasn't really dreaming so forth yet. And then I had a dream that we won 3 and lost 2. So my husband and I quickly changed some of the ones that we were not so sure about to try to avoid that and put in the bets. And we won 3 and lost 2, which is still losing because you have to pay extra money to the bookmaker and so forth. But the point is, if we had not changed them, we would have had them all right. If we had not changed them in order to avoid that, we would have. It turns out that all of them would have been correct, but when we saw that we were going to win 3 and lose 2, we quickly tried to change the ones we were not sure of.
Or as we were talking about earlier, guessing numerical things like that is very hard to do. Some people seem able to do it, but that really doesn't correspond to what most people can do successfully.
And the other comment I had to make was that I do appreciate a physicist such as yourself and a psychiatrist such as the other doctor approaching the subject and talking about it, because in general, I would never mention these things to either one of people in your professions, because I'm quite sure psychiatrists would think me daft immediately. So I'm just really gratified that you folks are studying the subject and so forth.
Well, we appreciate your input there, Marie, and for sharing those things with us.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. I'm Bill Jenkins. Tonight we're talking to Dr. Judith Orloff, you two here. Welcome aboard.
Hi, Bill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is great. I'm lucky I was happened to be home tonight. I'm 24, and I've been having...
What's your name?
Jeff.
All right, Jeff.
And I've been... I've had... excuse me. several psychic experiences since the age of 17, and it was interesting. My IQ approaches the high 100s, and... it seems like during the past 5-year period, during the summer months, I have the most intense PK and telepathic clairvoyant experiences. And this year especially, you know, it was interesting what Judith was talking about, because I had hectic kundalini experiences. And 3 times...
They just came on themselves? You didn't induce them?
I started getting... In fact, it corresponded to a period that I was getting back into the psychic perception and trying to evolve myself in that way. And I was hospitalized 3 times for being kind of disoriented and delusional, quote-unquote. And they diagnosed me as being a manic depressive, bipolar manic depressive, which actually what it means is I use both sides of my brain, and I'm hypomanic, which means I'm less than manic, which means, you know, that I function on a high level, you know, always up and that type of thing. And it was interesting because they started giving me, you know, they hospitalized me for about 8 days and 10 days the other time. And they started giving me lithium, which just, you know, took away everything I had. And I kept on telling them, look, you know, I meditate, you know, I'm training to be a yogi. And I've had these heavy kundalini experiences, you know, the tingling at the base of the spine and trouble swallowing, etc. And I kept on trying to explain this to them. And they just took that as a sign of being delusional. And finally, they gave me Thorazine. But I got to the point where I could control my bodily functions to almost like the yogic state, you know, like almost dead. And I was able to combat these drugs so they wouldn't affect me. And I definitely want to get a hold of Judith, and because I think there's a lot I can do to help people that are diagnosed as being this way. And I wish I had known about you guys, because I feel a lot better now. I mean, I have it fully under control now, and I'm able to, I'm teaching people, and I'm, you know, I give Shakti Pad, which is power in Sanskrit. And it's, I really love your show, and I'm really glad I finally got to hear something that relates to my views.
Well, I'm glad you stepped in with us tonight, Jeff.
Great. Thanks very much, Bill.
All right.
Bye-bye. Could you...